Welcome to another episode of Launchpad Podcast presented by Apollo Media, all Houston, all original. I am one of your hosts, LaShard Binkley. I am the director of basketball operation for Overtime Heroics. I am a contributor for Space City Scoop, and actually I just released an article today on Space City Scoop, so definitely check it out. Also a podcast host, of course, for the Launchpad Podcast. And you can find me on Twitter at HTownForLife40, all caps.
And I'm your second host, Anthony Duckett, site expert for Space City Scoop and pod host for the Launchpad Podcast, of course. And you can find me on Twitter at @A_Duckett. And be sure to follow the official Apollo Media account at Apollo Houston, well, at Apollo HOU, as well as hitting the subscribe button on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcast. We will greatly appreciate it.
All right, Anthony. So normally we go through and we talk about what three topics we're going to have today, but since it's the end of the year and the Rockets, unfortunately, are one of the worst teams in the league and we're all looking forward to draft, we're really just going to play this podcast by ear. So first off, I definitely want to start off with not just the last few games, but pretty much all season, kind of the young player development that the Rockets have had. Because, of course, like I said, when you're in the worst team in the league, there's not really a lot to talk about as far as scheming and game to game. And, of course, there's no playoff position to talk about when it comes to the Rockets. So we really need to talk about the actual future of the Rockets. And it kind of starts with the young players like a KJ Martin and Jay Sean Tate, Kevin Porter Jr., even on Armani Brooks, who just came up not too long ago from the G League. So what's kind of been your thoughts on, I know a lot of people were disappointed about the Harden trade, what they got back for it, and what they got back in the at first the Victor Oladipo trade, but a lot of people have changed their mind on that one. But what's kind of your thoughts on how the Rockets have developed the young players and players that basically nobody else wanted when they were first coming out of college or coming out of the G League?
I feel like the Rockets have gotten great development from especially Jay Sean Tate, obviously, throughout the year. I don't think that we knew, well, we definitely didn't know a year ago that he would be one of our best players, all around players, especially as a rookie. I mean, even despite the Rockets' bad record, he's legitimately in the Rookie of the Year race. He won't win the award, obviously, but I mean, he's been rising. I feel like, every month and practically every week, up that ladder. In fact, I even saw, I think recently he was like third the Rookie of the Year poll, which is, again, crazy. It's just considering the Rockets record. But it goes to show how great he's been, how he has developed throughout the year. One of the players I've been really excited about has been KJ Martin over the season. At first, I felt like we knew he was raw coming out because, he didn't go to Vanderbilt. He went to, I think, IMG Academy. So not going to college, it's kind of, obviously he was a project. He's raw player, a talent, high upside, a lot of athleticism, in the league for a long time. Excuse me. He has actually developed a 3-point shot over the course of the season. And I think I saw a stat that he's shooting like 37% from three over the last, I don't know how many games, like over the last.
Yeah, so that's several games. Yeah. He's
been shooting which is crazy. Well, the last two games, he's shot 57% from three. It just goes to show this is, I think, one of the valuable traits of Steven Silas. If we had D'Antoni, these guys wouldn't even be getting minutes at all.
Not even close.
If we had D'Antoni, obviously, the roster would be full of 35-year-olds, 15-year vets who'd be sucking up those minutes. Yeah. So as far as the development standpoint goes, I think the Rockets have gotten great development. Like I said, I've been really excited about KJ Martin in particular. One of the things I've been wondering is if he can become an actual defensive anchor, because we know that he can block shots. He's got crazy athleticism. He's going to be able to block shots, and he can get the best of them. And he usually gets one or two impactful blocks a game, it feels like, usually on like a 7-footer. Yeah. But I've really been curious to see if we think that he can actually develop into that defensive anchor with time.
Yeah, so he kind of reminds me of Sean Marion a little bit as far as way he played. He's versatile. He can block shots. He's athletic. I mean, Sean Marion, when he first came in the league, he didn't shoot this well from three. He never really was a great three-point shooter. I mean, I think most of the time he spent when he was in Dallas, but he kind of reminded me like of a Sean Marion who, even at the small forward position, was kind of the anchor of the most of the defense that he played for. I mean, the last three games, like you mentioned, he's shooting 9 for 16 from three-point range the last three games, which is crazy. Mm-hmm. Considering, you know, when he came in, that was like the one thing everybody was saying he has to develop is a three-point shot. He didn't even shoot this well in the G League. And I think, again, that goes to a kind of an unsung hero of all this development is John Lucas, because he's the one that really works with all these players on their shooting. You know, him, KPJ, Jayson Tate, all of them, who from the beginning of the season to now, their three-point shooting, especially Tate and Martin, three-point shooting has definitely been a lot better than where it was beginning of the year. And so, I mean, if they develop that along with they already playing great defense, and like you said, KJ Martin is already probably one of the better weak side shot blockers in the league. It kind of reminds me of how Robert Covington was when he was with the Rockets, where he was like a really great weak side shot blocker. He can come over and help out on defense. And that's kind of where KJ Martin is, even though KJ Martin has, of course, extreme athleticism, yeah, probably one of the most athletic players in the league. And you mentioned Mike D'Antoni and how they wouldn't even be playing. I actually kind of, it makes me think of with Daryl Morey. I think Rafael Stone is actually the perfect GM right now for the Rockets. Cause if you think about it, do we really know if Daryl Morey is good at actually picking out young players that can develop? I mean, if you think about it,
it's true.
All the rosters the Rockets have had over the years, what young player did they, you know, pull up and develop that was within their system or they went out and found? I mean, occasionally he was able to find players off the waiver wire that nobody else wanted and they came in and contributed.
Yeah.
Vets. But actual young players, I don't think you can really think find a probably too just, many young
probably,
players.
Probably just Clint Capela.
Probably Clint Capela, yes, that's true. He did draft Clint Capela when basically he was just an afterthought coming out of France. So definitely Clint Capela. But, I mean, if you look that's pretty much the only one. If you look at Rafael Stone, I mean, he went out and got Tate, who was playing in the Australian League, that nobody was thinking about, nobody was even considering. He traded for KPJ, which anybody could have traded for him. I mean, the Rockets traded a heavily protected second-round pick that they're never actually going to convey to the Cleveland Cavaliers. I mean, yeah, 52. It's never probably going to happen. And then you go out there, you get KJ Martin, who they traded. I think they – did they buy that pick with cash, if I'm not mistaken?
Yes.
That second-round pick. So they bought that with cash in a late second round where basically 50 other teams – well, 30 other teams – almost twice passed on KJ Martin.
Right, right.
So, I mean, if you look at Rafael Stone, probably the perfect GM right now for where the Rockets are currently at, where they need to develop young players. So it's actually pretty remarkable where a lot of these young players started beginning of the year to where they are now, where next year they're going to be major parts of possibly, knock on wood, a playoff contending team.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't mentioned really Kevin Porter Jr. either.
Yeah, exactly.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, yeah, exactly. Probably the most important one out of all of them.
Yeah, I mean, that trade was such a fleece. And it surprises me that nobody really talks about how much of a fleece that trade was. Yeah. We actually have heard a lot more about the Oladipo trade. Well, like you said, not recently because of, you know, how Linux played.
Yeah.
Deepo hasn't played at all. But to me, it doesn't really get talked about enough that Kevin Porter Jr., we got him for a second round pick that won't even convey.
Yeah.
And they traded like three picks to get him where they drafted him at. The Cavaliers did.
Yeah. When they originally drafted him, yeah.
You know, but I mean that organization really is kind of a dumpster fire from what we've seen about quotes coming out about Sexton and Kevin Love or whatever. I'm curious if we can get anybody else from them for another second round pick. It won't convey.
I mean, it's possible because you looking at their coaching situation. It's just all it's a big mess over at Cleveland. So yeah, I mean, if they want to send Colin Sexton or Garland over or. I don't know who else they honestly, we didn't want Jared Allen, so probably not Jared Allen because they didn't want to pay all that money. But, yeah, I think that's kind of where the Rockets are right now, where they're looking to kind of take players that nobody else, no other team wants, and kind of bring him in, like the best Kyrie in the league, Kyrie Thomas, that they just signed off a 10-day, and he was 6 for 7 yesterday. It was actually one of the best players on the court. So it's just kind of crazy how they – that's the one good thing about being a horrible team to have no playoff, no chance of going to the playoffs, is that you can actually play a lot of young players and see what you have. So – that's one positive, Rockets fans, that at least the Rockets have been able to play the young players pretty much all the entire year.
Yeah, you know, one thing I feel like is that the Rockets, I saw that they have had to play 28 different players this season, which is like the most ever, I think. Well, most since the Grizzlies did it, I think, in 2016 or something like that. Yeah. But what I've been impressed by is that a lot of the players that we've just signed to scrap heaps have stepped in immediately, like Kyrie Thomas yesterday, and then Armani Brooks, his first couple of games, he lit it up. And then lately, he's gotten his shot back a little bit more, too. So a lot of the players that we have to just sign because we didn't have enough players to play a game have actually stepped in right away. I guess they've all been in shape or been training, staying ready.
Yeah, we may talk a little bit about this later, but that's kind of another reason why – even though they've been a horrible season, I have confidence in Coach Silas, because I don't think any of the players that have been out there, I don't think the team that he has now, I don't think any of them have actually just given up on Coach Silas. I think they play hard for him every night. And he was able to get these, basically G League players and players that weren't even in the league to go out there and compete with one of the best teams in the league. Now, maybe Milwaukee was taking it easy on them, but even when Milwaukee tried to pick up the pace and try to blow the Rockets out, the Rockets still hung with them pretty much the entire game. So you have to give credit to Coach Silas with that. I mean, like I wrote in my article that just came out.
Great
Coach
article, Silas, by the way.
Appreciate that. Great editing, as usual. Coach Silas probably had to deal with the worst – situation any first year coach in any sport that I can think of has to deal with. We were talking about this before we got on the pod. I mean, you're talking about both your superstars you thought that were going to be on the team, one out. You're dealing with COVID, so you had a shortened offseason, if you really can even call it offseason, not much of a training camp. You're a first time ever coach, and then your first week, you basically half your team is out due to COVID protocols. And then you're dealing with all the other trades and then all the other injuries. And you had, I think they close to 40 different starting lineups at this point. So, I mean, there's crazy. Really no way you can judge Coach Silas, but at least last night and last couple of games, even against Philadelphia, the game before, I mean, you could tell the team always plays hard. They always go out there. And this is something that, Big Sarge always points out on Twitter. You can always tell the team is playing hard. They never give up. They give their all. So that's why I think that Coach Charles will be able to turn this around, and then next year is going to be a totally different year. Of course, it comes down to who they get in the first. If they get that first overall pick or second overall pick. But at least you can see the foundation where the Rockets are kind of wanting to go and how Coach Charles is able to coach up the players that he has on the roster. So that's definitely something positive you can take away from all this.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I think the situation – I mean, although it sucked, I will say that Silas has made the most of it. And I don't think that he would – well, he actually said that even if he had known what was going to happen with the season, he would have still taken the job.
Yeah.
So I think it's been valuable year for him. He's not going to ever have to really deal with more than he dealt with this season, And then on top of that, the Rockets have, as we've talked about, they have a very young team. So – him being able to, get meaningful rapport, chemistry, with these players, and also vice versa. They know, his system. They know what he expects of them. He knows what he can expect of them and can get out of them, and I think that if the Rockets will eventually, one way or another this summer, get some more players, better players, and even a fringe star level player, that's only going to be obviously a lot more better for him, for the team, and more importantly, for the long-term future of the team.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I said, that's why everybody needs to be patient, which I know is kind of it's a weird thing for some, not just Rockets fans. I don't want to just pigeonhole just Rockets fans. Like, they're the only ones that act like this, but just fans in general, when it comes to a developing team, and I know it's been a long time since the Rockets haven't been in the playoffs. And I know a lot of people aren't used to that, but, you know, me, myself being older, I understand that sometimes you're just going to have down season. It's just the way it is. It's just kind of how you develop and how, you know, I see them going in the right direction. That's kind of where I look at it, you know, this whole entire season. So that's kind of helped me get through it anyway. So that's going to wrap up this first segment. The second segment, we're going to actually talk about more about the off season, and we're going to talk about whether we think, or actually, what number do we think is best to re-sign Kelly Olynyk? What number we wouldn't go past as far as how much we would pay him per year? And just kind of talk about possibility of maybe getting another free agent if they would have let Kelly Olynyk go and open up some more cap space. So please stick around.
Looking for a better way to rep H-Town? Be sure to check out ApolloHOU.com for Astros and Rockets apparel you can't find anywhere else. Use promo code LAUNCH for 10% off at checkout. Apollo HOU, all Houston, all original.
And continuing on here at the Launchpad Podcast presented by Apollo Media, if you enjoy the show, please do us a favor and drop a review or leave us some stars. All right, on the first segment, we've talked about the player development that we've seen from the Rockets team on the roster thus far. In this segment, I want us to kind of talk more about some of the offseason moves, some of the offseason changes roster-wise that we anticipate or that we would do. Starting with Kelly Olynyk, I mean, he's kind of been the big talk, obviously. He's had a really good season in Houston since he's had a really good stint in Houston since the Oladipo trade. But he's a free agent into the season, which has, you know, sparked a lot of conversation on how much would you pay him, you know, what kind of contract would he get. So I think I'll start there and ask you kind of, what do you think, is there a limit of what you're willing to pay him from an average annual standpoint?
So again, it comes down to, you know, of course, with the draft, because if you're getting Cade Cunningham, then I would say I wouldn't go any higher than, because right now Kelly Olynyk is around $10 million a year. I wouldn't go any higher than $12 million. I mean, I know you kind of, you know, grasping at straws once you go 10 to 12 million, 12 or 13 million, but my number would be 12 million and less, just because, yes, Kelly Olynyk has been great. He's been actually, if you look at it as a whole, he's been their best player since he's been traded here. He's been their most consistent player. He's played in every single game. But again, he is 30 years old. Yeah. And, you know, at some point, you know, his play is going to decline. And I would probably offer him, I would probably start with the same contract, 2 years, $10 million, and then won't go any higher in 2 years, $12 million. But again, if you're getting Evan Mobley, then it's really no point in bringing in Kelly Olynyk, because as great as he's been, do you really want a $12 million a year guy coming off your bench as right. your backup big, and you're splitting minutes between him, Wood, and Mobley? I think 12 million is kind of the number, but the problem with that is if you look at the free agents that's going to be available next year, I mean, it's not the greatest class. And then if you break it down by big men, it's even worse. I mean, you're looking at players like Collins is probably the best big man that's going to be available. He's probably going to be looking for a max. But then you start looking at players like Andre Drummond. Then you start looking at players like Serge Ibaka. I mean, Montrezl Harrell. If you look at it, out of those players, at what Kelly Olynyk is going to be asking for, if you're another team, who would you go for? Would you go for a Kelly Olynyk, or would you go for Andre Drummond, who's probably going to be asking for $20+ million a year? Most teams are really going to be going after Kelly Olynyk. So that's the problem. I think he's going to price himself out of what the Rockets can pay, or should pay anyway.
Yeah, I mean, so I don't think we're going to be able to get him on a 2-year deal. I think he's at his age, he's going to probably want a 3 or 4 year deal.
Yeah.
I agree with you on the 12. I have actually seen people saying they would give him $16 million a year, which is shocking to me. Yeah. To me, the number that I would feel most comfortable with is 12 per year. I think I'd even be willing to go up to 14 on an average if there's a team option in there for the last year and it's kind of backloaded. I think I'd be cool with that. But again, I do agree that if you end up drafting Mobley, then it's really not even worth talking about, because if you have Mobley, as you mentioned, I mean, maybe from a veteran standpoint, having Olynyk would help him, but I mean, he would probably be stunning his growth and development. A lot of those minutes that, would be going to Olynyk, because you would be absolutely playing him a lot if you're paying him as much as you are. I mean, a lot of those minutes that would be going to Olynyk, I think, really would be better off going to a rookie in Mobley. So in my opinion, I really don't want to pay him more than 12. That's probably the number I'm most comfortable with, but I could see a scenario where if it goes to 14, I'd do that, but I'm definitely not paying 16.
That's way too much for a guy that, I mean, even if they don't get Mobley, $16 million a year, especially if it's over 3 or 4 years, that's a lot to be given to somebody at the end of the contract. It's going to be 33, 34 years old. And I mean, especially if you trade away Eric Gordon, then you're opening up a max slot. And I know the free agency, like we said, is kind of a down year, but you still have also sign and trades. So you're not just limited to just free agents. I don't know if you really want to hamper yourself by giving Kelly Olynyk $16 million a year, because I don't think you're going to be able to just say, hey, Kelly, why don't you just wait while we go out here and see if we can find a max guy, and then don't go sign with anybody else. I think he's going to be one of the players that's going to sign one of the first 2 days that free agency starts. So $16 million a year, that's kind of high. I mean, the good thing about it, the draft would already have happened before free agency starts. So that's the good thing. You already kind of know where you're going to be at, who you're going to have. So, yeah, $16 million a year is kind of high, if you ask me, because as much as great as Kelly Olynyk's been playing, I mean, what's the saying that they have, especially a lot in NFL contract year? There's no guarantee that Kelly Olynyk is going to play like this on his next contract. See Daniel House. I mean, that's kind of all the stuff you got to kind of factor into that.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely ball out in your contract year. And to be honest, I don't really think that he's going to get 16 a year from anywhere. I mean, we've seen his body of work. He's played great here, but it's also a very small sample size. Yeah. You know, is a team going to reward him massively off of that, handful of games? Not a handful, but what would have been, 30 games or so around there? I don't think so. So I don't really think the Rockets need to outbid themselves for him. Obviously, he would be a valuable piece to a number of teams, but I don't think that any of those teams are going to pay him $16 million a year, though. So,
yeah, I mean, also look at what teams are going to have free agents. I mean, they're not going to trade away a player just to fit in Kelly Olynyk. As great as he's been, I mean, most teams, they're going to be trying to just fit him into whatever slot that they already have. And kind of leading into the offseason, talking more about the offseason. So let's say the Rockets don't get the first two picks and they have a number three or number four pick. Would you trade that number three or four pick and package it to get a player like a Zach LaVine, for instance, or a Karl Anthony Towns?
Oh, man, I've been all over this train. So in my opinion, it's actually something that you have to consider. If you're not in a position to get Mobley or obviously Cade, then, you still have Milwaukee's pick, first-round pick, which will be low, obviously, but still a first-round pick in this year's draft.
Yeah.
And you likely still have Portland's first-round pick as well, which will also be low. But still, I mean, if you're in a position to trade three first-round picks, or, I mean, even two first-round picks, especially if you're trading a three, you probably need to include the third pick. If you have a pick in the top five that you're trading to somewhere, I think that would be – really tempting for Chicago when it comes to LaVine, who's about to be a free agent after next year, or Minnesota for Cat, because I mean, Minnesota probably would be hard because he's so young, 24 years old. He's got like four more years left. He just got an extension, I think year before last.
Yeah.
So he's under contract long-term, but I mean, it's not really like they're it's not like them having him has made them, you know, a top five team in the West. I mean, and they've got a lot of talent on that roster. And there's, I mean, I don't know that they're going to be top five or top, you know, top six, maybe competing for a play in at some point on the line. But, you know, I think they would have to consider it as well. Also, maybe even the Wizards with Bradley Beal, you know?
Yeah, I mean, he's a possibility because, I mean, if you look at it, I mean, Westbrook has actually been their best player. It was crazy at the beginning of the year. They were talking about free Bradley Beal, you know, free Bradley Beal. But now it's like, you know, Bradley Beal has been good, but he hasn't been as good as he's been the previous, you know, couple of years. So that's a possibility because, I mean, great as you know, Westbrook been playing, the Wizards are still like a ninth or 10th seed. You know, they're not really going to compete in the playoffs. I mean, and if you look at it, the way I look at it, Jalen Green, Jalen Suggs are probably going to be good players. Even Jonathan Kuminga, if you know, if you're saying maybe you'll take him over one of the guards, but they're probably going to be really good players, maybe even great players. But I think the chances of them being franchise changing or good as Karl Anthony Towns or Zach LaVine or right now, I don't know if those chances are that great.
Right.
I just think that those players are really good players. But if I can trade at number three or number four pick and get one of those all, you know, all-star type players, I'm definitely going for it. Even a, let's say they do get that three or four pick, you don't even necessarily have to trade it for maybe a top-level star. Maybe you'll trade it for a lower-level player that's a really good player and then go out there and sign a player like Lonzo Ball. The more I watch him and the more I've paid attention to actually his game, I mean, his game has improved so much from where when he was with the Lakers, where he couldn't even hit the side of a barn most nights. I think, you know, and like you had mentioned before we got on, him going to New Orleans has been the best thing for him. He's improved his shot making. He's improved his free throw shooting. He's improved, you know, being able to get to the basket. And he's probably going to be asking for around the 25 million, close to $30 million range. I think that's probably around his max. But that's definitely another person you could possibly look at. But, of course, the problem again is you still have John Wall on the roster. So that's going to that kind of just changes everything. And, you know, as we finish this second segment, let me ask you this again. Any chance that you would trade or – well, of course, you would probably trade John Wall, but would you trade him for, let's say, two first-round picks to get off of his contract and be able to have that extra cap space? Because for the people that are saying buy him out, that sounds great. But John Wall is not giving up 30% of his salary to be able to move on to another team, because that's what you have to do. It's not just by the team saying, hey, I want to buy you out and I'll give you this money. Teams aren't just going to give you $50, $60 million left on a two-year contract, and players are not giving up 30, 40% majority of the time. I know Blake Griffin sort of did that, but that's not a normal thing for players to do. So would you trade John Wall if you had to give up two first-round picks, for instance?
I mean, my position on that has consistently been no, I wouldn't want to do that, only because – I think those two first-round picks can become so valuable as it pertains to getting a, like you talked about, getting a fringe star-level player. Also because, I mean, we really have to hustle to get those draft picks, you know.
Yes.
I don't think that the time to do that is now. I really think – so John Wall's got a $44 million next year and then $47 million the year after in the player option that we know he's going to take. He's not walking away from $47
million. No way.
In my opinion, the time to trade him would actually be a year from now because in an expiring – basically, I mean, it would be an expiring deal. Although it would be $47 million, it would be an expiring deal, which becomes a lot, you know, less problematic for a team to take on because they're not locked in long term. In my opinion, if you trade him a year from now, you probably won't have to give up two first-round picks because, again, a team is only trading for 1 year of his deal, right?
Yeah.
So I don't think I would want to trade two first-round picks. I mean, I understand the appeal there because, you get off that $91 million. You know, and I'm sure that, like I said, I don't think that will be a bad idea. because you free up, that's a lot of coin that you free up, you know, a lot of players you can fit into that alone. But yeah. I just don't think I would want to get rid of two first round picks. And I know that, you know, somebody mentioned to me, well, what if you're trading, you know, Milwaukee's pick and Portland's pick, you know, the late picks anyways, would you do that? Yeah. I mean, in that case, you know, that makes more sense, but I just think you can use those picks better.
Yeah, I mean, I know most people don't pay attention like to end of drafts and, you know, mock drafts, stuff like that. But there's actually some decent talent at the end of this first round. I mean, even like a Jalen Johnson, the rookie that was playing at Duke before he left. I mean, he was considered a top 10 pick if he would have stayed in college. It didn't work out for him at Duke, and he's coming out into the draft now. But if he falls down to – you know, where the Rockets are drafting in the low teens or high 20s, he's the type of player that you can get for one of those picks that can possibly be a really good player, because he was one of the top players going into college before he went to Duke. He was probably like one of the top 10 or 15 players in the whole nation. So there's plenty of talent at the end of the draft. And I just really think it comes down to, can you convince John Wall to take a step back? Because in a perfect world, if John Wall was to take a step back and be more of into a mental role and let Kevin Porter Jr. or even a Cade Cunningham kind of take the lead, then I wouldn't be in such a hurry to even trade him, because I think he could add value. But that's the problem. And you can't really blame John Wall, because he's been out for 2 years. He's trying to prove himself. He's trying to prove that he's still one of the best players in the league. So that's where you're going to have a problem trying to convince John Wall that, hey, it's best for the team overall if you kind of take a step back and let the other players take the lead. So that's why this is a tricky situation. I mean, one hand, you're better off trading him and getting that money and being able to let people like Kevin Porter Jr. take the lead. But on the other hand, you're giving away a lot of draft capital just to get rid of a player, and you're not really getting anything back in return. So it's a tricky situation, but I agree with you. If they do plan on trading them, it's best to do it next year. I mean, if you can do it at the trade deadline, great. I don't think that would happen. But if you can do it at the end of next year, I mean, that's a huge amount of money that'll be coming off somebody's book the year after that. So that would probably be the best time to do it. Like you said, probably around this time next year. So again, it's kind of a tricky situation. We'll kind of see how this all plays out with the Rockets and the free agency and drafting and the draft lottery. That's where kind of all this is going to start, is when they finally find out where they're going to be drafting. So it'll be an interesting offseason for sure. That's going to wrap up this second segment. In the last segment, we're going to actually kind of go backwards a little bit. We're going to talk about what the team would have looked like if, for instance, Russell Westbrook and James Harden would decide to stay. Where would they have been at in the West? Would they be one of the top four teams? Would they be struggling to get in the playoffs? Where would they exactly be out in the rankings? So please stick around.
Looking for a better way to rep H-Town? Be sure to check out ApolloHOU.com for Astros and Rockets apparel you can't find anywhere else. Use promo code LAUNCH for 10% off at checkout. Apollo HOU, all Houston, all original.
Hello, and welcome back to the Launchpad Podcast presented by Apollo Media. As usual, if you appreciate our work, please leave us some reviews and some stars. That always helps us out, and we appreciate everyone's support as we go through this podcast. So, Anthony, this last segment we're going to be talking about, we're kind of going to go backwards and talk about what the team would have looked like if Russell Westbrook and James Harden would actually have stayed this year, and kind of where they would have ended up or where they would be at this point in the season. So let me ask you that, Anthony. So let's say Russell Westbrook woke up and said, you know what? I want to stay with the Rockets and see how this team works out. And let's say James Harden hadn't talked to Kevin Durant all summer long and wanted to go to Brooklyn. Where do you see this team would have been at with, let's say, a starting lineup of Westbrook, Harden, Jayson Tate, Christian Wood, and, I mean, I don't know who would have possibly been the power forward. That's kind of hard to say, because P.J. Tucker would have still been here, honestly, at that point. Yeah. So where would you think this roster would have been at in the standings if they would all stay together?
Well, I think the first thing is – so first of all, I've actually been thinking about this a lot, and it's just been painful thoughts. But I think it really depends on if the coach in that situation is Silas or if it's D'Antoni. But if we're saying that the coach is, let's just say Silas, because D'Antoni's, you know, issue was really kind of separate from Harden. It was a contract deal, whatever. So let's just say it's Silas. I think that the Rockets with Russ, Harden, and Christian Wood alone would probably be top three in the West, because I mean they were fourth last year and they didn't even have a legit big. Well, they didn't have a big at all. Well, I mean, of course they traded Capella, but in my opinion, I don't really see how that team doesn't at least finish third. You know, I think that, well, obviously, as you mentioned before we started recording, if, you know, Christian Wood has had injury issues, so we don't really know, obviously, if that obviously continues, if he had those same injuries this season, then it comes down to Russ and Harden. But even those two alone, you know, you would basically be going back to small ball if Wood is out for long stretches of time and you still have PJ on a roster. In my opinion, like I said, that team, that trio would be third in the West. Even if Wood is injured, you still have Jayshon Tate on the roster, who would have gotten very, very meaningful minutes as well. Probably wouldn't have Kevin Porter Jr. in that case, because, you know, the reason why he came was because that trade that, you know, involving Harden, he got upset in locker room, tirade or whatever they said happened. So you wouldn't have KPJ. But again, I mean, there's no way that a team of Russ and Harden, and then on top of that, I mean, there's their second year playing together in Houston. You know, I always think that year two is a lot better than the first year, because you have more chemistry now. You know, I play off each other in this new system, new philosophy. Granted, it would have been a different coach than they played with the first time, so that matters a little bit. But again, at the end of the day, if you have Harden, Russ, Christian Wood, Jayshon Tate, KJ Martin would have gotten really good minutes as well under Silas. Again, not under D'Antoni, but under Silas, he would have gotten really good minutes. I just don't see how that team doesn't finish third in the West. I think I'll say third, because I still think Utah, I mean, their season in Phoenix. But third in the West, I mean, that's as good of a shot as any.
I mean, yeah, because if you look at it with all the injuries other teams have had throughout the year, and again, people always forget, and Westbrook was top five player from January to March before before the season was halted. He was one of the best players in the league in the start of 2020. He was putting up basically the same numbers he's putting up now, and nobody was really paying attention. Everybody was focused just on that, you know, he had a horrible playoffs, which, of course, we know now he was playing. He came back from the injury, you know, sooner than he wanted to. He was trying to help the team. And then he was also dealing with COVID after effects, which we know, you know, with players like Jason Tatum mentioning, like, you know, he has a hard time breathing sometimes. Yeah. So just imagine trying to come back into the playoffs right after that and trying to play. You know, we see why he struggled in the playoffs. So if you get the Westbrook you're getting right now, can you imagine him playing with a Harden, with a Jayshon Tate, with a Christian Wood? That team would actually be better than the team they have right now, had last year. This team that they have right now, they would have better players around, which, again, you point out, which is true, they wouldn't probably have Kevin Porter Jr., because they probably wouldn't have been looking for a player like Kevin Porter Jr. But if you're adding Harden with Westbrook, and, of course, we're factoring if they're, you know, actually healthy, because Harden hasn't played in, you know, a few weeks. But if you're factoring in that they're healthy and you put them when Jayshon takes, I think Jayshon takes the type of player, no matter how many minutes he's playing, he's going to develop his game. So he would have been the same Jayshon Tate, honestly. If you factor all that in, yeah, the Rockets would have probably been a top four seed, which is kind of funny, because if you look at Westbrook, as great as he's playing, they're still only a ninth or 10th seed. Of course, you know, Brooklyn is Brooklyn. They're still one of the best teams. But, I mean, if you look at it, yeah, like you said, they definitely would have been a top four seed.
Yeah, I mean, there's just no way that they wouldn't have. Now, maybe the question of, you know, would Harden have bought into Silas, because he didn't really want Silas here.
Yeah.
You know, and at the beginning of the year, you know, he wasn't really committed to Silas. But I also think a lot of that was that by that point he had his mind set on being somewhere else, you know. Yeah. So that it's more so about Harden didn't really want Silas. I just think he just didn't want to be here in general. We know that Russ was a strong believer in Silas. He even talked about it after the trade about how he, you know, thinks he's a great leader, you know, the things that he really liked about Silas. So I think that if Russ and Harden are obviously very close, Russ would probably have been able to get Harden to reel in, dial in any kind of whatever thoughts that he might have had about playing for Silas. So in that case, you know, I don't think that would have been an issue, at least for this year. Now, the only question about that is, again, we know that Harden wanted out. If they ran it back another year, would you really have just been delaying the inevitable? I mean, would he have still said, okay, get me out of here after this season?
I think so, because I think ultimately he just wanted to play with his buddies. He wanted to play with Kevin Durant. And as great as – let's say the Rockets, they go out there and they battle and they get to the second round, or, you know, let's say they even get to the conference finals. At the end of the day, you know, Kevin Durant is still Kevin Durant. The Rockets won't have a Kevin Durant on their team. So I think ultimately if they would have got beat in the playoffs in the second or third round, he would have won it out anyway, just because he thinks and, you know, I mean, he's right. Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving are better than anybody the Rockets have at this point right now. So he still would have ultimately won it out, because I don't think he wants to take the load on anymore. I think he wants to be able to do exactly what he's doing now, take it easy, kind of stay in the weeds, and then, you know, when it's time to play, you know, he picks it up. I don't think he wants to have to try to carry the load the entire season anymore. You know, right or wrong, you know, whether you think that's something that a, you know, $40+ million player should be able to do, I don't think he really wants to do that anymore. He's spoken on that, like, well, now I don't have to do this, I don't have to do that, I can let somebody else do it. So however you know, believe that, you know, I know there's a lot of Rockets fans still in Houston and they don't like to hear anything negative about Harden, but that's a whole nother podcast. But when it comes, when it comes down to it, it really was, he didn't want to have to take on the load. He didn't want to have to be the lead dog. I mean, that's just honest. That's just the way it is, which is fine. You know, some players just, they can't handle that as much as other players. Like a LeBron James, that's kind of what he's built for. And even, you know, a player like Giannis, he hasn't won anything yet, but, you know, he still kind of, he stayed in Milwaukee, even though he could easily, you know, decide to take off. Now, we'll see in a few years if they keep losing in the first or second round, if he still believes that, but you know, some players just, they don't want to have to take on that entire load. And to be fair, Harden did do that for, what, 7-8 years. So, you know, I don't want to be unfair when it comes to that. But at this point in his career, I just don't think that he really wants to stay with a team that has potential. He wanted to be on a great team.
Yeah, I mean, he did carry – he absolutely carried the offensive load for, like, I mean, 9 years. But at the same token, it seemed like at the time he wanted to play like that. He wanted that type of philosophy, that style, because people say that, you know, he had these numbers just because of, you know, D'Antoni. But even if you look at when he was under McHale, he was still an MVP. I mean, arguably should have won it the 2014-15 year.
Yeah,
I mean, arguably he should have won it. And even when they had that crazy year where they fired McHale, like, 10 games in.
Finished 500,
and Bickerstaff became the interim. I mean, Harden didn't get any love that year at all, but he actually had a really good season also. So it's not like it was just, you know, D'Antoni is the reason why he was playing that way. That seems like – it pretty much seems like any coach that got the job knew that this is kind of what Harden wants to do and how you kind of have to coach him up. So I do get that he carried the offensive load for so long and he was wanted more around him. And he's even said stuff recently, like, you know, when I was in Houston, I had to play a certain kind of way, or I had to, you know, score 40 a night or else we weren't going to win. And that got exhausting. So, I mean, it definitely seems like you're right that he didn't want that load. And think about it, when he came in the league, he was a sixth man. He was a third, you know, a third scoring option. And all of a sudden he kind of morphed overnight into the guy. But you know, it makes sense that he just kind of got burned out.
Yeah, I mean, at some point, and also you have to say, even though he did carry a lot of load, he also didn't make it easy for anybody else to help him carry the load. Right. I mean, the way his game is, he's not exactly the type of player that is easy to play along. Well, at least how he was playing in Houston a lot of time. He's not exactly, you saw a lot of time with Chris Paul. Chris Paul's not the type of player to really just stand in the corner and jack up threes. But a lot of time, that's what he was relegated to, especially that first year. It was successful. Don't get me wrong, but you kind of saw there's no way that relationship was going to work over a long period of time because they're just two totally different players. And you saw eventually that it had to change. Now, I'm not going to sit up and say James Harden's game has changed like some people have in the media. They say that James Harden completely changed his game. He's a totally different player. No, I just think that he's just a little bit more willing to let other players step forward. But his actual game really hasn't changed when he's on the court. He's still ball dominant. He's still the guy with the ball in his hands. He's still the guy that's going to get you the assists. He's still going to take a lot of the shots, even when he was on the court with Kyrie Irving or Durant at different times. So I don't think his game has changed a lot. I just think he's just more willing to let other players like Durant and Kyrie Irving kind of step forward sometimes. So it'll be interesting to see in the playoffs. And actually, kind of as we wrap up this podcast, I want to ask you, so let's just say they're all healthy on Brooklyn. Where do you kind of see the playoffs kind of playing out at? Who do you see in the Eastern Conference Finals, and who do you kind of see in the Western Conference Finals?
Well, in Eastern Conference Finals, I think that the matchup I would love to see, I'll say that, is Brooklyn-Milwaukee, because the games they've played recently have actually been really good ones. I mean, the Sunday game came down to last-second shot that KD would probably normally make. The second game they played also. Now, they were without Harden, obviously, so that makes a difference. But I think that Eastern Conference Finals is either Brooklyn-Milwaukee or Brooklyn-Philly. Both of those matchups, I think, are tough for Brooklyn because you're talking about a big that they really can't slow down. I mean, even in the Milwaukee game, they basically had DeAndre Jordan,
that didn't work out. Yeah.
Yeah. They just basically said, we're going to have him man the fort on Giannis. And I mean, Giannis almost dropped 50, and I think I saw a stat that like 36 of those points was actually when DeAndre Jordan was defending him.
Yeah, as big as DeAndre Jordan is, I mean, he completely bodied him out of the lane several times. So, yeah, I don't see how they have anybody can guard him.
And, I mean, same problem with Philly. I mean, they don't have, like you said before we were recording, they don't have anyone that could stop Joel Embiid. You know, it would be the same problem for them with either of those matchups.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what it comes down to, because the reason why teams were able to beat Milwaukee in the past because they were able to bottle up Giannis. Like, Miami just has multiple defenders. I mean, Bam is like the perfect guy to guard Giannis, just because he may not be as long as Giannis, but he's just as strong, and he's able to stay with them out on the perimeter. And then the years before that, it was actually funny. It was Al Horford. When he was with Philadelphia, he's able to, guard a player like a Giannis, or even a Toronto, they had Kawhi Leonard. So you definitely have to have somebody. Nobody's going to stop Giannis, but you have to have somebody that can at least, contain him. And DeAndre Jordan has pretty much zero chance, because even though he's just as big as Giannis, but Giannis, like you said, almost put up 50, and it seemed like it was a really easy 50. I don't know if he even broke a sweat. So I don't know if they have – much great as the Brooklyn's offense is, it's going to be with their defense. Are they going to be able to stop people? But at the end of the day, I think it's probably going to be, like you said, Brooklyn, Philly, or Brooklyn and Milwaukee, because those are the best teams in the East, hands down. I know people have been talking about the Knicks, but
no,
the Knicks probably want to get out of the first round. I mean, it's a nice story, but that's probably as far as they're going to go. It's really those three teams. But so who do you see in the West? Do you see the Lakers still being that team, even though they've been struggling, or who do you see in the West?
West is tough because of the fact that I don't believe the Jazz are going to get to the Western Conference Finals. No. Yeah. Although they've been a great story. Like the Knicks in that great feel-good story. I don't see them getting to the Western Conference Finals. I think Phoenix will definitely get there. Phoenix, I've got them penciled in for the Western Conference Finals. I have pretty much been on the the hill that the Lakers will get it right in time for the playoffs. I really can't jump off of it. So I'm going to still say Lakers, Phoenix, but I've actually obviously been very concerned about the Lakers, especially health issues. I mean, Anthony Davis, for as big as he is, he gets hurt like every game.
He's basically the Christian Wood. I'm hoping Christian Wood gets better and gets stronger and doesn't get hurt. But man, every time Christian Wood goes up, it's like, is he going to get hurt? Every time he comes down with a rebound. And it's the same thing with Anthony Davis. He, before last year, he was always hurt, but now it's back to the same thing.
I mean, he got injured on a non-contact play about a scoring board. It's like,
yeah, exactly.
not even like body contact with another player or nothing. Like he had just made a shot or took a shot. And I mean, do you not understand? Like, do you not know the positioning of the court? Like you've been playing for like in the NBA for like 10 years or around there. And you don't know what a scoring table is, a scoring board. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And you think about it, last year, older teams got more of a benefit because they didn't have to travel anywhere. They were just all just in one place. But now it's going to be back to the back and forth, traveling here, traveling there. I think that's going to take a toll on like some of these older teams.
But, I mean, I still think that a healthy LeBron and a healthy AD, I don't really think it matters what seed they get. I think, first of all, I'm actually excited that they're in a play-in. That's awesome because LeBron said he thought it was a good idea, and then now he's like, oh, they need to be fired. Whoever needs to be fired, and this is a bad idea. And I think it'd be great for ratings also.
Everybody be watching that.
but I still think that a healthy LeBron, a healthy AD, that's the key word in both those cases now. But a healthy LeBron, healthy AD, I don't really think it matters what seed they're at. I still think the Western Conference Finals would be Phoenix versus the Lakers. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I've been the same way. Lakers get healthy, they're still the team to beat. But, man, because even LeBron was saying that he could have just be setting up a narrative type thing. Narrative. But he was saying that he's not going to be healthy for the rest of the year, which, as you pointed out, most players aren't healthy at this time of year. But even if he slowed down to 90%, I think that opens the door up. And like you said, with Anthony Davis, he has an injury history. And last year, he was actually healthy for most of the year. But this year, he's been on and off. He's been hurt. He's been not hurt. And then you factor in, what is Dennis Schroeder going to give in the playoffs? I think he's actually going to be a positive for them, actually, when it's all said and done. But then you got, what is Andre Drummond going to bring to playoffs? Is he going to be more of a detriment to the team, or is he going to be a player that's actually going to help them like Dwight Howard and JaVale McGee did last year? So they got a lot of question marks. So, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if the Clippers finally get to the Western Conference Final this year.
Oh, yeah?
Just because I think that Paul George gets a bad rap. I think he's still one of the best – two-way players in the league. And if he actually continues to play like he's been playing and actually gets past the playoff P nickname he's had the last few years, I think the Clippers do have a shot. Now, they're not going to beat a team if, like you say, if LeBron and AD are healthy. I don't think they beat the Lakers. But, again, we don't know. I mean, it hasn't been like that all year for the Lakers. Even last year, they still had a long period of time where the Lakers were the best team in the league. They haven't been like that this year. Like, at what point can you say the Lakers, well, they were the best team in the league? I can't really think of a point. So, I think the West is a lot more wide open than the East. Because even with Denver, if Jamal Murray – I don't even know if Jamal Murray is going to be back for the playoffs. I don't know if they've said that one way or another. But if Jamal Murray was to somehow come back for the playoffs, I mean, I wouldn't sleep on Denver. I mean, Denver got – pretty close last year, and they actually gave the Lakers a run for their money in the playoffs last year because Michael Porter Jr. actually is taking that next step this year. So I think that, Denver, you don't want to sleep on them. But at the end of the day, it's all about health. If the Lakers are healthy, they'll be there. If they are hindered or if Anthony Davis is playing hobbled, I really do think the Clippers have a chance.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the flip side of the coin is if the Lakers' health issues do continue, then, Clippers, Phoenix, would be a really good matchup. Especially if you have Rondo versus Chris Paul battle that, you know, that just keeps on going. I think the last time they played, Rondo didn't even mention his name. He said they're point guard number.
That point guard, yes. Yeah, he's a petty one. I'll give him that. He know how to get on people's skin.
Now Denver. So Murray has a torn ACL. So Murray's out for the season.
Yeah. I don't think he's going to be back at all. So that's the biggest thing for them. I mean, but I still think they can give teams some trouble in the playoffs just because with Jokic
and been playing out of
Michael Porter Jr. I mean, he's been great for them. Now Will Barton's been hurt for them, so he's been out.
Yeah.
Aaron Gordon is exactly who we thought he was. I mean, yes. I know a lot of people were like, oh, Aaron Gordon's been great since. No, Aaron Gordon's been doing exactly what he's been doing all year. He's puts up his 12, 14 points a game, his 5 rebounds. He may get a highlight dunk every once in a while, but that's why I was like, when people were talking about trading for him, Rockets, I was like, nah, I'm good. We can pass on him because I just don't think he's anything special, just to be perfectly honest with you.
And that's why I was surprised when he's like making demands, like, I don't want to go.
Yes.
Who is he to be saying, don't trade me here? You know what I mean?
I was like, great. Yeah, he just saved us some trouble. He's not anything special. But yeah, I mean, that's, you know, as we wrap it up, yeah, I think it's going to be ultimately Lakers, Phoenix. And then I still think it's going to be probably Philadelphia and Brooklyn. And those will be two great, you know, conference finals, and then we'll kind of see where it goes from there. But as we were talking about before we got on, this would just be the first playoffs where we don't have to worry about anything at all as Rockets fans. We can just sit back and watch other teams implode and have bad playoffs. And,
as an NBA fan.
And yeah, we just sit back and watch and just wait for the draft. So that's kind of where the Rockets, the state of things are for the Rockets. But that's going to wrap it up for today's episode. As usual, Anthony, it's great talking basketball with you. We can
always
probably talk for another 2 hours, but
yeah.
I don't think the people at Apollo probably want that. So we're gonna wrap it up for today's episode. That's going to do it for today's episode. So if you haven't done so, please be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcast.
And be sure to follow at Apollo HOU for blogs, merchandise, video podcasts, and even more original Houston sports content not found anywhere else.
As always, thank you so much for listening. And we look forward to having you back for our next episode of Launchpad Podcast covering your Houston Rockets.